B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Out of all the guys I interview, there's one thing really unique about Gary Hoey. He always brings his instrument to the interview. That's a little snippet of one of the riffs he plays for us today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. His new record, Neon Highway Blues, drops on March 15th. We talk all about the record, including the 70s hard rock blues influence that some of the songs have.
Absolutely, exactly. And we recorded actually 17 songs. Only 11 songs ended up on the record.
We also get into another record that Gary's working on with the legendary Lita Ford.
It's going great, man. Matter of fact, since I spoke to you, we finished another two songs.
We talk about some of the rock cruises he's been on, as well as my friend John Five. Then, as a special treat for you, I talk with Bob Tyrell. He's a legendary tattoo artist. You want to talk about a guy that goes to rock concerts? I don't know anyone that goes to more rock concerts than Bob. Plus, Aaron Ruby, also a tattoo artist, and you might know him as the bass player for the band Walls of Jericho. That's all coming up today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thank you as always for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. I do appreciate it. If you like this, 5-star rating, write a review, share with your friends as always. No Alan Beck today. I'm not sure where Al is. I'm at work and I don't know where he is. He's now nowhere to be found. So I thought, you know what, we'll just scrap rock news today and give you a couple more interviews. One with tattoo legend Bob Tyrell. If you're into black and grays, portraits, skulls, that kind of thing, Bob is one of the best. Check out his Instagram page. I mean, just unbelievable. Plus, Aaron Ruby, a guy who I just met for the first time at the Motor City Tattoo Convention. He's also the bass player for the band Walls of Jericho, and he's got some amazing tattoo work as well. Both these guys heavy into the rock world. But first, it's Gary Hoey, Neon Highway Blues. His new record drops on March 15th, and I'll tell you what, man, just such a great guy. Gary's awesome. Great guitar player. Of course, a lot of people know him as the Ho Ho Hoey guy around Christmas time. And that's where, of course, he makes a lot of his hay. But I'll tell you what, man, he's a great blues guitar player as well. He's got his guitar in hand, like I mentioned in the open, and just an awesome guy to talk to. It's Talkin' Rock with Meltdown today with Gary Hoey. Hey, Gary, is that you?
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, my friend?
Dude, how can you be good when you have the blues?
Exactly. I know, I should just go, hi, I Meltdown. How you doing, Gary? I'm okay.
I was just listening to some of the tracks here from the record, and now I've got the blues.
I know, you're like, gotta go.
Hey, man, really good to hear you. Of course, outside of Christmas time, man, I don't have to talk about Santa Claus or anything this time around, huh?
No, I'm just here to spread the blues.
So this record, Neon Highway Blues, drops on March 15th. I know we've talked about it for a long time, and now it's finally here, so you got to be pretty excited about it, eh?
Yes, absolutely, man. I'm very excited that it's here, it's out, and, you know, we got some shows coming up, and we're getting out and playing some dates, and I'm very happy, actually. It's nice to have it out.
Now, will your son go on tour with you and play some of the dates, too?
Well, we're looking at his schedule. You know, I think we got to work around school, obviously. But when he has like a spring break or summer break, we'll bring him out for some shows get him out when we can. But he loves football. I think we talked about this and everything. So he's real committed to sports and everything. So we're working around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you can have like you can do one of those hologram things when he can't make, like they've been doing with, you know, right, Ronnie James Dio, right, and stuff. Just have your son out there. Yeah.
Well, he's way better looking than me, so we can just get one of those cardboard cutouts of him. He looks like John Mayer. We'll just put on the side of the stage.
There you go. Yeah, all of our kids should be better looking than us. There's no question about it, right?
Right. Well, you know, plus my wife is gorgeous, so I guess that's where it comes from. Someone met my wife, and they said, oh, I'm so sorry, you're blind. I said, shut up. So, never mind.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, like, you know, you got a great family life. You got your, you know, career's going great. You got good-looking kids and the whole thing, and you still got the blues.
And I still woke up and said,
there it is. There it is. There it is. Yep, exactly. Yeah, you're never far away from your guitar, are you?
really.
Man, that's great. Yeah, so this record, like, from what I've heard, I've only heard a couple tracks here. That it's I mean, I guess this is kind of a, I don't know what kind of a statement this would be, but it's very like Kenny Wayne Shepherd to me. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, man. I mean, I think there's a lot of traditional blues on it for sure. And, you know, I tried to kind of cover some of the people that I like as far as the blues world, like you know, Albert Collins, Freddie King, B.B. King, Stevie Ray, which is, you know, Kenny Wayne. That's the same world. And then I like the heavy stuff. Like, I used to really like the, you know, like the Zeppelin would have, like, have like a riff like that. So I wrote a song, it goes, it's a song called Living the High Life. And, you know, I wanted to kind of go a little bit off of, you know, just doing straight blues all the time, you know.
Yeah, because the two tracks I've heard so far off this record, which is, I think, the only ones that's really available right now, is the one with Under the Rug with Eric Gales, and then of course the one Don't Come Crying with your son. So those are, yeah, a little bit more traditional bluesy type tracks.
Yes, absolutely. And Eric Gale's one, you know, has that, you know, you know, it's got kind of a funk feel. And then I wanted to have that, you know, you know, it's got kind of the, I think Jeff Becker, when I hear that riff, you know, I think of the Jeff Beck sort of sound. Back in the, you know, why was it Blow By, what was that one called, Freeway Jam kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we just put out one called Your Kind of Love, which is a new song, that we just released, which, again, is more traditional. But some of the other songs, there's three instrumental tracks on this record that, you know, we put on, and three instrumentals, and there's also, you know, a few of the heavier. I love the heavy stuff, too. You know me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I grew up with, like, the whole Black Sabbath. You know, being a fan of, like, that kind of, you remember that song, I was just playing the other night thinking about it, what's that song by Sabbath is it Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath?
Now you're starting to sound like my wife, who always goes, you know that guy?
Yeah, you're like, remember that song?
Yeah, Sabbath.
But the you know, you go back to that, and then I have a song on my new record that goes, you know, and it has that heavy, you know, Sabbath. I don't know if it's Kashmir. I don't know.
Now, what song is that you just played off your new record? What's that called?
It's called I Felt Alive.
I Felt Alive. Okay. Track number 7 I'm looking at.
I Felt Alive.
Yeah.
And it's got that kind of, like, you know, I go. You know, that slide kind of Zeppelin sound. I always love that sound. And so to me, that's where I'm sort of trying to mix, you know, what I've been doing in the rock world with the blues world.
Yeah, kind of like a 70s hard rock type of thing.
Absolutely. Exactly. And we recorded actually 17 songs. Only 11 songs ended up on the record. And some of the ones we didn't put on this record will probably end up on the next record. They're again, it's kind of like you just said, that's, it's kind of a 70s sort of hard rock, classic rock kind of sound. And I want to kind of keep that in there too.
Now, opposed to the 70s tracks, you know, and 70s records and stuff, you've got the title track on the end. Is there a reason for that?
You know, the title track was one that, if you listen to it, it just has a feeling of the end of the record. You know, it was the mood of the song. When I wrote that song, I was thinking of, you know, David Lynch, the film guy. Yeah, David Lynch always had these weird kind of movies with weird soundtracks. That song reminds me of a David Lynch movie because it's got an eerie sort of sound with the dobro. I'm using my dobro resonator on that one.
Yeah, because I'm glad you said that, because, like, I think I'm a lot like you in the fact that, you know, I'm sure that these songs are not put in this order by accident. And it's like, you know, nowadays in the world, I've talked about this before with many other artists, but it's like, you know, we're in this world where it's like a one slice of the pie here, one slice of the pie there, where I want to check out the whole pie. You know what I'm saying? Together.
Yes, absolutely. And that kind of, you know, what I did when I was sequencing the record is just thinking about, you know, how is it going to flow and what song fits into the next one. And that's kind of how we ended the album with Neon Highway Blues. It's just, you know, it's cool. It's for people that know blues, it's typically blues is a 12-bar blues. You know, it's 12 measures of music. But that song is a 6-bar blues. So it's a weird, odd number. and I think it makes it kind of a quirky song.
Yeah. Now, you got some special artists like we were just talking about with, you know, your son and Eric Gales and Josh Smith and whatnot. Is there anybody that you tried to get that you couldn't get for any reason?
Well, there were some people that were going to be on the album that, you know, it didn't happen because of scheduling and things like that. But yeah, I wanted to have Warren Haynes from the Allman Brothers and Government Mule. Warren Haynes is a friend of mine, and I wanted to have him on the record, but the timing didn't work out. I wanted to have Joe Bonamassa. Mm. I wanted to have Eric Clapton, but he didn't return any of my calls.
I was just going to throw Slash out there. Right, exactly.
So I wanted Jimi Hendrix, but he's dead, so he couldn't play. And that's my list.
That damn Eric Clapton, I told you. I told you that was going to happen.
I know, right? I'm like, I'm calling his house, and I'm like, you know, Eric, it's me. And, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm leaving messages like... He's like, Gary, leave me alone, man. Just leave me alone.
Have you ever had a chance to meet Eric Clapton?
You know, it's funny. My old manager, Dave Kaplan, not Dave Clapton.
Yeah.
that's a weird one. Dave Clapton. He just put out a Christmas record in America. He licensed with Eric Clapton, and you think he would have introduced me to him. He didn't introduce you to him yet. But no, I have not met Eric Clapton, but I'll meet him someday.
Yeah. Hey, on other records that you've worked on and stuff, I think I talk about this with you every single time I talk to you, but what's going on with the Lita Ford record?
It's going great, man. Matter of fact, since I spoke to you, we finished another 2 songs. And it's coming along really well. She's got a bunch of songs that are done, and she's got a few more we're going to finish. And I know she's getting close to either signing a new record deal or something with somebody. So she's excited to get it out, and I can't wait for people to hear it. It's really good.
Now, how many songs have you guys completed on that record?
We have, you know, I know we're pretty close to the end, so we might have 10 songs right now. That she's been working on off and on with me, and then she's got a few more that she just was telling me about. So yeah, man, it's coming along really well.
Now, you play on this record, you just produce it, or what's going on? I'm assuming you play on it, right?
We do. We kind of trade off. I mean, she plays. I push her to do all the solos because it's her record, you know. But once in a while, she'll be like, she'll literally throw the guitar at me and go, play right there. I don't want to play there. You play there, and I'll just play something, you know. Or it is funny because sometimes we're actually trading because she's throwing the guitar at me. And then sometimes I'll write a song with her, and I might just play, you know, the riff in the beginning or something just the way she liked it. And she's like, you know what, I'm going to leave that the way you played it. So it's kind of like that. We go back and forth, and I think it creates a cool sound, you know, with us playing together.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm looking forward to hearing that as well. And I know we talk about that every time because I know you guys have been working on that for a long time. You go on these, you know, you do these rock and roll fantasy camps and these cruises you've been doing lately. And do any of these things influence you? Like, did you go on this, you know, like blues cruise, for example, and come back and go, you know, maybe I should try this with this particular song? Or has this record just been finished and you're just done with it and you put it away?
Well, you know, it's funny. The album over the last year and a half that I've been finishing this record, and another person I wanted to get on my record was Walter Trout. I don't know if you're a fan of Walter or you know Walter, but great blues, legendary blues guy. He was going to play on the record too. But, you know, over the last year and a half and last couple of years, honestly, when I went on the road with Eric Gales and Lance Lopez and we were over in Europe and Quinn Sullivan, you know, we were always challenging each other, man. We were always pushing each other. And when I go on that cruise and play with these different players, I mean, it's amazing. And the blues cruise was an eye-opener because it was everyone from Taj Mahal to Kenny Wayne Shepherd, you know, in between. And, you know, I always talk to you about this. The blues is this weird kind of music that has – it's harder than it looks and it's simpler than it looks. So it's like I did pick up a lot of things. By hearing all these different players, it was affecting the way I played. But, you know, I always keep coming back to me, you know, like – I might pull out an old amp from 1963 and dust off the thing and plug it in and go, yeah, I'm going to sound like this guy. And then all of a sudden I go, you know what? That don't sound like me. And so I go back to my Eddie Van Halen hot rodded rock amp and I play the blues on that and it sounds like me. So, you know, you got to be yourself, but I do get inspired, man, all the time.
Yeah, that's cool because I know, you know, on Instagram and whatnot, you post about all these cruises and stuff. And I mean, it's got to be fun just to go out there. I mean, I love the cruises and whatnot and going to the special tropical, you know, locales and whatnot. But still then to hang out with all these guys who you admire and, you know, get inspired by, it's got to be just a cherry on top, eh?
You know, it is amazing. It really is. Because, you know, when you're in a band and you're touring, you don't see, like, a lot of the musicians. They're always kind of at an airport. You run into them here or there. But when you're stuck on a ship in the middle of the ocean for 4 days, like, nobody can really go anywhere. So, you run into the musicians and you're all hanging out. And then we want to go see, you know, whatever show it is, like Foghat, or we went to see Roger Daltrey. Roger Daltrey went to see Night Ranger on the last cruise, and we went to see all these different guys. And, you know, we're fans, too. Like, we're out there in the audience, you know, getting sunburned with everybody else.
Yeah, I just went over the weekend and saw my friend John Five in Akron, Ohio. You a fan of John's?
Yes, man. A fan and a friend, actually. I've known John for many, many years. Great guy and great guitar player, huh?
Yeah, and not only great guitar player, great ukulele player, great banjo player. Man, that guy plays everything.
Yeah, he does, man. He's a multi-talented, and he's done, you know, he played with Katie Lang and Rob Zombie, and he was out on the road with, who was the other band he was touring with?
Manson, David Lee Roth, the whole thing.
Yeah, Manson, David Lee Roth. So, you know, for people that don't know, he's been in so many bands, and he's an excellent guitar player. But, he's got, like, that country hillbilly, you know, bluegrass redneck, but he looks like the Joker, and he's going to come and kill you.
Right, yeah. He was influenced as a kid by Roy Clark. You know, he grew up here in Detroit.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that's right. And he, Roy Clark from that Chibi show, right?
Yeah, Hee Haw.
Hee Haw. Oh, my God. I used to love Roy Clark, too, man. Matter of fact, I used to watch the show for two reasons. I would wait to see Roy bring out his guitar, and then the other reason was for the girls in their shorts. But I would play, and he would always play something like this. He'd always go. I got my Daisy Dukes.
Yeah. Not only the Daisy Dukes and the shorts, but also the cleavage that was always in that show.
Well, they just put it together with those shirts with the tied thing at the
bottom.
That's
right. That's right. Yeah.
Everything was hanging all out, and I was like 8 years old.
Right.
I was like,
Now, can you pick like John Five? Can you pick with each finger, or are you just a pick guy? Like use a pick?
I like using the pick, and I do use my fingers for like some of the like fucking stuff. Like if I'm gonna go, and I know John does it like some crazy country kind of stuff. So I don't take it to the extreme that John does. He's really awesome with that stuff he does. But I'll do stuff like this. I'll go. You know, or like when I do some of my Christmas stuff, I go. You know, I gotta work on my chicken picking.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, speaking of Christmas, real fast, I think last time we talked to you, you were kind of working on some stuff for another Christmas album. Is that true? Or you anything coming up in 2019 here?
Yeah, we have a bunch of Christmas songs finished, and I'm trying to actually right now look into seeing if we can turn it into an official album or not. So that's in the works. We'll see.
Yeah.
I think I have to jump on another interview right now I'm looking at here.
You know what? I figured you might be running out of time here, but it's always great talking to you, Gary. So listen, Neon Highway Blues comes out March 15th, and as always, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for playing the guitar, and we'll see you sometime here in Detroit this year in 2019.
Yes, you too, my friend, and I'm totally looking forward to coming back. playing the record. I know the last time your son had a hockey game.
He did. You know how life goes. It's just the way things happen. But I owe you a drink or a dinner or something. So.
No, my friend, I'm looking forward to seeing you. And thanks so much for having me on so soon after Christmas. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Gary. Get on your other interviews, and thanks for the time, brother.
All right. All the best, bro. Thank you.
See you, man.
Nice. Bye.
Hey, here at the Motor City Tattoo Expo with one of my favorite guys, Bob Tyrell. He told me he'd be here at 1:30 and right on time at 2 o'clock. Here he is.
What's going on, man?
Dude, I got to tell you, I follow your Instagram, and I'm like, are you kidding me? You're at the Kiss show at the Whiskey. I mean, that must have been amazing.
It was surreal, man, to see him in a place that small. You know, it holds like, 400 people or something. But it was crazy. It was amazing. And it's the first time they ever played there in their career. They'd never played the Whiskey in their 47-year career, you know. You think maybe they would have, like, you know, when the first or second album came out. But yeah, it was probably first and only time to play the Whiskey, so it's a legendary venue, you know.
You know why I think they never played there before, and this is just my guess. I have nothing really to back this up, but other than the fact that I've talked to Gene before, is that they kind of broke in the Midwest, and they weren't getting any traction on the coast. You know what I'm saying?
That's true, yeah. I mean, Detroit was the first place they were playing arenas when they were playing theaters, like around the rest of the country or whatever. You know, so yeah, I can see maybe out there that, yeah, it took a little while for them to catch on. Probably when they did, they probably started playing arenas pretty quickly everywhere, you know, or warming up somebody for a minute, and then they caught on and got big everywhere, you know.
And now Nikki Sixx is like, Kiss is like stealing our gimmick and stuff. And I'm like, dude, come on, man.
I saw that, man. I was surprised. I'm like, wow, you know.
Are you going to go there? It's like,
yeah, you know. I mean, they got, you know, Kiss were a huge influence on them, I'm sure, you know.
Kiss did everything that Motley Crue did 10 years earlier.
Right. For sure.
So you played that Dime Bash thing. Now, where was that? Was that in California?
Yeah, that was at the Observatory in Santa Ana, California. It's part of the NAMM thing. You know, there's shows every night. There were like four concerts at night. There was Metal Allegiance. There was a Randy Rhoads Remembered thing, you know, and there's a Bonzo Bash. So people are doing all four of those shows. And Dime Bash was, you know, was sold out. And I've been to a few, and this second one I've actually got to play at, you know, played last year too. But Nick Bocock was saying this year was the best year, you know, and so many fucking great.
Yeah, tell us who was out there.
John Five, you know, Rex Brown, bass player for Pantera.
Phil wasn't there though, right?
Phil wasn't there, no. Scott and Charlie from Anthrax. You know, Doug Pinnick from King's X, who I got to play with. Johnny Kelly, drummer for Typo Negative. Got to play with both those guys, man.
Wait, you played with Doug Pinnick, you said, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, King's X is one of those underrated bands, you know?
Dude, we did, it was Doug Pinnick, me, Nick Bocott on guitar, and we're all left-handed. And Johnny Kelly played drums on, and we did Jailbreak. So it's the Thin Lizzy song, so we called ourselves Thin Lefty. Yeah. That's the first time I've seen three lefty guitarists on stage ever, you know. It was really cool, man.
So how many concerts do you think you went to out of 365 days last year?
362 days? I don't know.
Really?
No, I go to, I always tell people I base my life around concerts, you know.
I know you do.
I go to too many. You know, I can't work when I go to concerts because I work at night usually. I'm a night owl, you know, so I need to go to a few less concerts this year and work a little more.
Now, when you go to these conventions like this, is this, how much is working, how much is networking, how much is just kind of, you know, doing that kind of thing?
I usually go to work. I mean, I need the money, you know, but...
Do you already have things lined up for today?
You know, today I didn't book. I booked yesterday, and I'm doing a seminar tomorrow, so today I kind of left open. But now I'm here, and I kind of want to work, so I might try to do something today. But yeah, I usually work all 3 days of a convention. It's getting harder over the years, you know. You're talking to so many people, and it's just hard to work because you're talking to someone every 5 minutes, you know. But I get to see all my friends from around the world at conventions, and I think that's why I do them, more to see my friends I never see. I made friends all over the world, you know, so... I love it, but it's hectic, and I'm pretty burned out right now on them, you know.
Hey, I want to ask you something. How has social media, and especially like a thing like Instagram, helped your business?
I guess it helps. You know, I mean, we've all got a lot of followers on Instagram. But
years ago, it's like, oh, that's a great tattoo. Where'd you get it? When you meet somebody. But now it's like you put it out there and the whole world can see it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it helps. And a lot of these newer artists are like, call them like Instagram guys or whatever, you know. But they have like 500,000 followers and shit, you know. It probably hasn't helped me much. I mean, I'm still booking the way I always used to. I mean, that probably helps, like, when I'm at a convention and people see that. But, I mean, yeah, back in the day, it used to be word of mouth. And
or if you get a magazine or something, probably.
And magazines were, like, the source for to see artists from around the world, you know. I mean, that was, magazines were everything when I started. That's what got me to where I am, was magazines. Now magazines aren't as relevant, you know, because of social media. But back in the day, magazines were, that was how you got your name out in the world, you know. So, but I don't know. Things have really changed.
So let me ask you this. We'll switch gears once again back to music. Have you seen or heard any bands lately that has really turned you on, like newer stuff?
You know,
what do you think of the Greta Van Fleet? You know, I mean, I was going to say the Greta Van Fleets of the world, but what do you think of Greta Van Fleet?
Well, I think they're killer, man. You know, and they're young kids, and they're, you know, playing classic rock, you know, which there's not a lot of kids their age doing that kind of thing. So they're, you know, they're talented. I think they're good, and they seem to be doing really good, you know.
Any other bands that you've seen lately?
I've always said, I mean, Blackberry Smoke's my favorite band of the last, but they've been around since, 2004 or something?
Well, I interviewed Charlie one time. He was telling me about stuff happening like 1992, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah, probably in the mainstream, you know.
I'd say probably the last 15 years they've got out there, and they keep growing every year, you know, and they're the hardest working band out there, really. But they're the real deal. Lynyrd Skynyrd's one of my favorite bands, and so they're I call them Southern Rock. You know, they're they've got a lot of country. They have a country feel, and they have a rock and roll feel. But I still call it Southern Rock. But
I think Holding All the Roses for me is like one of my favorite records from. I thought this last record was like okay, but Holding All the Roses I think is really what got me into them.
I think all the records are consistently awesome. They're all great. Holding All the Roses I think might be my favorite as well, man. The last one I think it's great. They're all a tiny bit different, but they're all pretty consistent at the same time. If that makes sense, you know. But I think they're fucking what's the word? Consistent, you know. They're and Charlie writes his ass off, you know. And they put out records at least every 2 years or so, sometimes faster than that. But no, they're the best band out there.
Now, how many rock stars do you think you've tattooed?
Quite a few. Mostly metal guys, you know. Frank and Troy from Tesla tattooed those guys, and Kid Rock and the whole band and stuff. But then it's all metal guys like
Scott Ian
from Anthrax, Kerry King and Gary Holt from Slayer, Death Angel guys.
You did the Death Angel artwork for their one of their records.
Yeah, for the last one.
Yeah.
The Evil Divide.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Thanks. Yeah, it's really cool.
They just finished recording a new album too, Death Angel.
Okay, yeah, people may or may not know, but you also did Kid Rock's Eagle on his back.
Yeah, that was back in 2001 when I did that.
And that was like a 2-day?
Yeah, it was 16 hours total, like 8 hours a day for 2 days in a row. You know, I went to his house and did it. And then like a month after I did the tattoo, he asked if I could do a drawing of the tattoo so they could use it for merch and stuff. So, and then it ended up on his beer and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so.
His bust and everything else.
Yeah, it's really cool to see it that like being used so much, you know. Because it was just a tattoo, you know. It was just a quick drawing I did.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. I'll tell you what. You're living the life, the rock and roll lifestyle, no question about that.
Man, I feel so lucky, blessed, fortunate, whatever the word is, you know. But I'm tattooing changed my life, you know, because I made kitchen countertops until I was 34 years old when I started tattooing. And I had no idea it would turn into this, you know, traveling the world, tattooing, you know, making friends with my heroes, you know, Kerry and Gary from Slayer, Scott from Anthrax, Tesla, You know, those were some of my favorite bands in the 80s, you know, and I never thought I'd even maybe meet them, let alone become friends with them and tattoo them and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know that you, I didn't know you had tattooed Frank's. I just had him on the podcast a couple weeks back.
Cool. Yeah, I did his first tattoo. I tattooed Troy years ago.
Right.
And then Frank, a friend of theirs passed away, and he was Frank's neighbor, a young kid, like 20 years old or something, and he was their merch guy, too, on tour, and he got killed in a car accident. And so the kid's friends were all getting this anchor that this guy had who passed away. Just a simple anchor. They're all getting it, you know, and it's a memorial thing. And then Frank wanted one. So when they were in town, Troy asked if I could bring my stuff down. And they were warming up Ted Nugent. So I did the tattoo, ran out and saw Ted Nugent and stuff. And Ted's my hero, you know.
Yeah.
But and then I got to meet Ted after through the Tesla guys. We all went over there and... That was really cool. It was a fun night. But yeah, that was Frank's tattoo. He was 46 years old, and he's got another one since then, and he wants more. I was talking to him last summer when they were here about doing something else, you know, so it happens, man. Gary Holt, I did his first tattoo when he was 46 years old, and now he's sleeved out and, you know. And
now, have you done all of his?
All but two.
I think I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't he have a skull or something that you didn't do or something, right?
Well, yeah, I took a demon head on his forearm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, your work is amazing. It's all over the place. And of course, I always try to push the rock stars towards you. You know, you met my friend Matt from Pop Evil.
Oh, yeah, Matt's awesome, man. Yeah.
He's got a lot of work as well. So what do you got going on this year? Just conventions, rock concerts, the usual?
Yeah, the usual, man. All of the above, you know. Yeah.
And I really want to push people towards your Instagram because, I mean, it's so killer to follow the life of Bob Tyrell from all our boring lives.
Yeah, whatever. You have a fucking awesome life, bro.
Yeah, no, I do. I can't complain. No complaints. Hey, man, well, listen, thanks for taking so much time with me, Bob.
Tim, thanks for having me, man. It was great to see you always, bro. I'll see you at a concert somewhere soon.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. All right, here at the Motor City Tattoo Expo as well with Aaron Ruby. Just talked to Bob Tyrell a little while ago. How are things going for you this weekend?
Good. It's a great weekend. Busy show. Looking good.
Yeah. Now, Bob was telling me, and I think I knew this before, but you play in Walls of Jericho?
Yeah.
Still?
Yep. Still going.
Bass player?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite bass players?
If you're going to go back to, like, classic stuff, some of my inspirations and favorites back in the day would be, like, John Entwistle, Geezer Butler, two big influences. Modern-day stuff, my friend Craig Sitari, a longtime friend now, actually, for Sick of It All, he's really definitely been a big inspiration to me, just as a person and getting to know somebody. I'd say that's probably my top three.
Yeah, I see you got your Sick of It All shirt on as well. Yeah, it's funny you mention John Entwistle. Johnny Chow is a friend of mine, and that's like his guy, you know, from Stone Sour and stuff. He says, and he told me when I saw him last time, or maybe I interviewed him, I can't remember. He's like, yeah, dude, John Entwistle plays bass differently than most guys do, you know. And he kind of explained that he kind of follows the vocals as opposed to different things, you know.
Yeah, and I really liked... His, I guess, mentally kind of how he wrapped his head around how he played. And there's a couple of interviews and some stuff that I've seen over the years where he talks about him coming up playing bass and where, you know, back when he was first playing, like, the bass was the quiet little thumpy thing in the background you didn't hear. And he was a bit more arrogant than others, and he wanted to be out and, like, he wanted people to hear what he was doing, you know. He wanted to really be out there. So he was really the first guy who started turning up that high end on the bass, and you can hear that bite of what he's playing, which really distinguishes what's going on with the bass. You know, you don't just hear the rumble. You hear the click, and you hear the bite and the growl and stuff. So he's kind of one of the first guys that did that. So that was one of the things that I always really respected about him. Drew me.
Yeah, I grew up in outside of Buffalo, and of course, you know, the home of Billy Sheehan. So yeah, I know all about what you're talking about. You're a Billy Sheehan fan?
I respect him. I've never been really a fan of anything that he does per se musically. The bands, the guy is an animal and can play amazing, which is really cool. The music that he chooses to play is not really a thing I'm into.
What's going on with Walls of Jericho right now?
Oh, we just got back from Europe with Sick of It All, actually. We did 2 weeks over there. Nothing really happening now. We'll go back in the summer. We'll hit some European festivals.
Now, when you're on a tour and stuff, is the tattoo stuff kind of put on this on the side, or do you anything when you're on tour?
You know, it used to be, but over the years now, I started taking my stuff and tattooing either on tour, or I'll stay in Europe a little bit after we're done with touring, or maybe go early and tattoo. I got a lot of friends over there that want stuff, so it's kind of turned into my clientele has expanded across the globe now. So,
yeah. How many of these conventions will you do this year, you think?
One.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. Just one.
Just the one close to home, and that's it.
Yeah, I can't not do it because of the convenience. But the other stuff, I have places I can tattoo now all over the place. So to do a convention is, it's kind of hard when I can just go guest spot somewhere and tattoo those same people and not deal with the hecticness of the convention as far as the setup and the logistics of getting your stuff there and having to find a place to stay and the cost of the convention itself and everything. I can just go have none of that and tattoo at someone else's shop. So.
Yeah. So you told me about your influences and stuff when it comes to playing the bass and that. What got you into tattooing?
I started by accident, to be honest. Man, a band I used to play in way before Walls, I had a fan of ours who was just covered in tattoos, and he was getting a band logo tattooed on him, and it's something I had drawn. He invited me to the shop and was just like, "Hey, I'm getting your logo tattooed. Like, come check it out," whatever. And I was like,
now, how many years ago is this?
23 years ago.
Okay, so you go there and you check it out.
I'm watching him get tattooed, and I met the owner of the shop, and everything seemed cool. And he's like, "Hey, let him color in some of it because he drew it, so it'd be funny." And I immediately went white, and I was like, "What? What? I don't know what I'm doing." And he's like, "No, it's okay." And he showed me some stuff. And I mean, it was lame. I tattooed him for I colored in like a little inch of this tattoo. I didn't do anything amazing. But it kind of sparked my interest a little bit. And then the owner was gracious enough to invite me back. And he was like, "Listen," he's like, "if you're really interested for real, like, come and hang out a little bit and just see what you think of it, you know. And then if you want it, we'll talk about an apprenticeship possibly or something." So I went and started hanging out there and learning about things. And it didn't seem as sketchy as in my head that I thought it would be, you know. I thought it would be really intimidating. And it just wasn't. It wasn't what I thought. It was maybe just because it was such a mellow situation. But I did that for a little bit, and then he's like, "I think you should really consider apprenticing, you know, give it a shot." So I did that and started spending all my free time up there and, you know, tattooing gradually and learning stuff. And it wasn't the best shop in the world, you know, but I learned a lot from them, and the guys there were real cool, and they really helped me out, and it was my start, you know. And then I did that, and then I was like, "Oh, this is actually pretty cool. I should probably keep doing this for a little while."
Well, I'll tell you what, I've seen some of your work, man. It's amazing. It's super great to meet you, follow you on Instagram and all that stuff. And I wish I had more time to talk, but apparently our thing is going to die here, and I don't want to cut you off. But thanks for taking the time, man.
Yeah, pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
There you have it. 3 for the price of 1 today in the Talking Rock with Meltdown podcast. Yeah, those guys are great, man. I'll tell you what, Bob Tyrell, Aaron Ruby, 2 of the best right there, and big time into the rock and roll. Just saw Bob Tyrell last night at the Kiss concert. I mean, there's not a concert that goes by that he doesn't see, and that's just more proof of it. Follow him on Instagram, and you'll know exactly what I mean. Follow both of them, actually, on Instagram, because both of them have some great pictures as far as, you know, their tattoos and whatnot are concerned. Hey, follow me as well, at Meltdown WRIF, or at Talking Rock with 1, and I'm up there on all the socials and whatnot. You can reach me by phone if you want. Leave a voicemail, 248-586-2988 as well. And we've got some pretty cool interviews lined up in the future. Another guitar great coming up here before the end of the month. Actually, a couple of them. So hang tight for that. Keep checking back. And thank you, as always, so much for listening.